Hello and welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and this week I'm joined by Jason Poon of Big D Soccer, American Soccer Analysis, and probably some other stuff that I'm not remembering, but everybody give a big welcome to Jason. How's it going, Jason?
Thanks, Dustin. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. I'm really hit hard by the allergy season, so that's not fun, but soccer-wise, it's been a fun season for FC Dallas, don't you think?
Yeah, so far so good. Three weeks ago, I had the same allergy bug that you did, and man, it's just not. You live in Austin, so you've got all of those, the cedars.
All of it. Cedar, oak, you name it, it's mine and it's ours. Yet people still want to live here.
I think I'm officially diagnosed as being allergic to Austin. So, but yes, back to FC Dallas. It's been a great season so far. We've seen FC Dallas play quite the gamut of opposition style. We've got a new coach implementing a new system, new tactics with some new players, both internal homegrown and also some transfers as well, like Brian Acosta and Cobra. So I thought we'd take a little bit of time and have Jason on the show and talk about what we're seeing from Luchi Gonzalez's tactics here in the first couple games. Like I said, we've seen them play against a low block with New England. We've seen them play against pressing sides. We've seen them play against kind of more ball playing sides. So we kind of know at this point what their tactics are going to look like and how they're going to, what it's going to look like faced up against different types of defenses. So let's dive in.
Let's do it. Yeah. It's been really fun to see Luchi Gonzalez do his thing. Everyone was kind of wondering, okay, what's he going to do? How's he going to do it? And then will we see any success at the beginning? And of course, at that point, success can be very subjective. Is it in terms of wins, or is it just getting his system in place? Or is it a combination of both? Is it playing the kids? I mean, he seems to have done all of them with great success. He's got the wins. He's got them playing the style he wants. There's still some little things to work out. The kids are playing all the time. I mean, I think Edwin Cirillo may be the fastest homegrown we've signed to see the first team. I think he signed in February. And then like 3 weeks later, he's like, yeah, he's on the bench. We're like, what the? Usually these signings take like a year or two of like sitting on the bench or on just being on the, be with the team, the first team. But yeah, he's been a big surprise.
Yeah. I don't think anybody saw that one coming. I think that, I think he was, you know, he's on some people's radars as far as like maybe he's going to get some minutes at some point, but I don't think anybody saw it coming that fast, except for maybe Luchi.
Luchi and Edwin.
That's right. So let's start off and we'll start broad and then kind of move around and but let's start off kind of base the conversation around their starting formation. So Luchi's started off the season with what we're calling a 4-3-3. It kind of morphs a little bit, but depending on whether or not we're in possession or not. But we'll call it a 4-3-3 for the purposes of this discussion. That's different from Oscar's 4-2-3, preferred 4-2-3-1. So let's kind of start at the back. Like, what have you noticed about how the defense plays in that 4-3-3 system?
Yeah, the defense. Well, we're seeing Hedges and Ziegler on the ball a lot more. Part of that is by design because of the possession style that they want to implement. So we're seeing that a lot more. And then we're seeing the fullbacks push up basically into the midfield while the center backs, they kind of spread out. And then they're, this kind of cheats a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about the midfielder, but the midfielder usually, well, in the last few games, it's been Cirillo who would drop in between Hedges and Ziegler. Basically, the midfielder becomes the third center back. They kind of morph into a three-man back line with both kind of, you know, Ryan Hollingshead and Reggie Cannon pushed into the midfield. So that's a little bit different. We're not seeing as much overlapping runs from the fullbacks, not from Hollingshead or from Cannon. I think that's by design, that the team is not playing their attack through the flanks, but rather through the middle a bit more than we have in the past. So that's kind of the difference. Defensively, it's still hard to gauge for me right now because I can't see them from my TV angle. So I can't see where they're setting up their blocks very well. But so far, mm-hmm. I mean, with all the possession, they don't really need to do very much. Maybe just sort out their set piece defending a bit more, since that seems to be their Achilles heel at the moment.
Yeah, that's definitely we'll call it an opportunity for improvement.
Yes, that's a good HR term.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm working on being more enterprise. I think it's definitely, I think you hit the nail on the head there with the center backs kind of being the, I guess, what shall we call it, the start of the pendulum or whatever. Like whenever Jesse gets the ball, he doesn't immediately just hoof it out anymore.
Right.
He plays it to one of the center backs who line up on either side of the 18-yard box, and then the play resumes from there. And I think what we've seen as a result is we've seen Matt Hedges kind of turn into a ball playing defenseman. Like, I think I've been really impressed. I don't think I have been really impressed with the way he's been playing the ball and the passes he's been making this season. And not Ziegler, I mean, maybe not so much, but Hedges in particular. What do you think about Hollingshead over there on the left flank as opposed to, say, Pedroso?
It's working under this system. Pedroso seemed to be more of kind of what Oscar Pereira wanted and needed from his old system. He needs someone to kind of bomb forward and, you know, support the left flank, support the left winger, and join in on the attack. Hollingshead can do that, but he doesn't do it with as much gusto. Hollingshead has more reads the game and goes, I see space and I'm going to go over there. The ball's going to come over here, so I'm going to anticipate that. But yeah, Hollingshead has really stepped it up. I think he has really understood what Richie Gonzalez wants out of this position. He's basically, in my mind right now, like one of the few who just cannot be dropped. You see, Hollingshead has to be on the left, and if Reggie Cannon is injured, you move him to the right, because the drop from Cannon to Hollingshead is pretty marginal at this point. The drop from Hollingshead to Pedroso was pretty significant the last time that happened. But yeah, I'm just very, I think Hollingshead has led this team in shot attempts in like 3 of the 5 games. I need to double check that, but that he has been tied for the first in shot attempts. I'm going, you're the left back. How are you this wide open inside the penalty area? But okay, you just figured out when to get forward, and when he gets forward, people are finding him and he's taking his chances.
For sure. Yeah, I think the other bit that plays into it, I think Hollingshead's style and soccer smarts does fit into Lucci's system a little bit better than Pedroso. I think the other thing is, I actually talked to him in the locker room and played the audio on the show. He was talking about how he had the surgery in the off season, and like he it was a hip surgery, like hip flexor surgery. And there's this one motion where you're kind of bringing the ball across your body that you need to do to cross the ball into the box or make that pass into the middle of the field. And he just can't do it without some pain right now. So I think that probably also plays like, now that was 3 or 4 weeks ago, so it might've improved, but I think that has also played a role in Hollingshead being able to make that role his own. So yeah, do you have any parting thoughts on the defense before we move kind of into up the field into the midfield?
I just want to affirm what you said about Hedges. I can't believe no one made a gif of this yet. I should probably do that after this. When he did that 360 spinorama and then backheeled it, like with I think 1 or 2 defenders around him, I was like, what the? Where was this?
Yeah.
It's like, did he always have that skill set with him and he just was hiding it? Or was he just being, did he develop this over the off season? Like what happened? That was gorgeous. That was beautiful soccer.
Yes, it was. Everybody around me was just, we saw that happen. We just kind of got this look on our face like, what just happened? There is a video, there's not a GIF, but there's a video of it on one of the MLS highlights tweets.
Good.
I looked it up and sent it to somebody the other day and said, hey, you got to see this. But yeah, so you can use that for your GIF. And okay. I expect, tag me when you tweet it.
Okay.
Because I want to be able to use it or at least share it. Okay. So we've got the center backs kind of leading the ball out of the back as we're playing our possession and playing our move up the field. And one of the things that kind of took a lot of people by surprise was just how that midfield system works out. We've got that three in the midfield with a 4-3-3. And at the beginning of the season, we had Ja'Cory Hayes and Brian Acosta and
Carlos Grezzo.
Yes, that's the one. How could I forget old Carlos? I don't. Anywho. So, yeah, we got those three in the midfield. But I think that what took everybody by surprise, everybody just thinks, oh, Carlos Grezzo, defensive midfielder. And that's it. But it was Bobby Warshaw actually coined the term triple pivot to kind of describe what Lucci's doing. Can you explain for us lay people or us? Well, explain it to me like I'm five, right? Like,
oh God.
Explain to me. explain this triple pivot theory to me. Okay. And to the audience.
Sure. So the funny thing is, I'd never heard the term triple pivot before Bobby's article, and I Googled it and there's no reference of it other than Bobby Washaw's piece. And then I did find this one guy who did a football manager say from like 2011 and he ran the triple pivot, but that's basically the extent of my Google search of what,
who is that guy? Let's get him signed up. He's ahead of his time.
I know. So As I understand it, the triple pivot is basically using three midfielders interchangeably, that they are all playing, have the same responsibilities and the same expectations, not at the same time. So like not all three of them are like covering the same person, but they are basically assigned to, hey, you are covering these areas. You are covering the space in front of your defense, so you're acting as the shield, which is a traditional defensive midfielder. You're kind of acting as the destroyer. So I think a lot of people are more familiar with the double pivot, which is kind of what they, Jose Mourinho's team used back in his Chelsea days with Nemanja Matic and Cesc Fabregas. So, you know, Matic was basically the guy who was running all over the place. And so he would be chasing the ball. So he would be the one basically running himself out of position, trying to get the ball back while leaving Fabregas in the back, and he would shield. So under Pareja's teams, we saw more traditional double pivots with Grezzo and Acosta, or Grezzo and Ulloa. Or Acosta, you know, or some combination, but one of them was generally dictating standing in front of the back four, and one was usually chasing. Usually, like Acosta would be chasing, Ulloa would be sitting in the back and just getting the ball and just swinging it outside. With the triple pivot, it's they're doing it all and also doing it in tandem, knowing what the other person is doing. If I had to guess, it would be a very mentally demanding position, more than physically. I think physically, there's still a lot of running, but to constantly be aware of your teammates and what's going on. So you have to know. So right now, let's just say it's Pomacall, Grezzo, and let's do Surio, because that's kind of the three right now. So those three always have to be aware of where the other two are. and where the opponents are. Yeah. So who's sitting in the back shielding, who's chasing, and then who's kind of linking everything. And so it's this beautiful choreographed dance in the midst of chaos. That's like the best way I can describe it. But it's, so there's supposed to be everything and not everything and nothing too, but it's very, very complicated. And I don't know how they figured this out so quickly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Acosta came in very late in the season.
He had visa issues, right? Yes. Like, no, he was affected by the government shutdown.
That's visa issues. And then someone on Twitter decided to tell us a big D that he was hiding in a cave somewhere. But we didn't fact check that. We just kind of thought that was a bit, like, sure. He's hiding. Okay. But yeah, he got in really late. So, oh gosh, who is our technical director right now?
It's the Brazilian guy from Grêmio.
Yeah.
Whose name just left me as you asked me. There's a piece most very recently from Armin Kefai where he talked to him.
Yeah. If he was responsible for getting Brian Acosta, kudos to him, because he found a player who understood the system very well. It's
Andre Zanata.
Thank you.
But I think he is responsible for bringing Brisson. I think Acosta might have been before him, but
maybe.
Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Do like your Big D channel and not fact check.
Yeah. So whoever signed him did their homework, because they found a player, a piece that understood. And then when we see how the triple pivot is used, like now I get why Surreal has been fast tracked. Like, okay, he understands what in the world this is and knows how to use it. That's why Pomykal is excelling right now, because he's like, yeah, I know what the system is. I know exactly where I'm supposed to be when so-and-so is over there. But yeah, it's this really beautiful dance through a very chaotic situation that I still don't quite understand how they can function this fast and this fluid.
Okay, so I guess the mark of being able to understand something is being able to repeat it. So let me see if I can re-verbalize what I think I heard you talk about. So all three defensemen have to know and understand each of the responsibilities of all three midfielders. All three of the midfielders have to know and understand each of the midfield roles and play them at any given point in the game based upon the game state and the things that are going on with the other, what are the things that the other players and the other teams are doing?
Yep.
I get a cookie.
Yes, you do. It was well earned.
Yay. We'll pretend I didn't just make that noise. yeah, I think it's one of the things that is interesting in the kind of an evidence of that triple pivot is when Grêmio is in the game, he's in the box a lot more than he used to. In fact, like in the last game, he got a goal. So, I mean, that's that evidence of that triple pivot right before our eyes?
I think so. Grêmio's now playing more advanced. I know Walsh said that that's kind of hard to tell which one's the defensive midfielder between the three. But recently, I think Cirillo's been sitting deeper than Pomykal and Grêmio, and I think part of that's also just by design to make the game a little more simpler. So I still think they interchange a bit, but for simplicity, I think they've asked him, hey, just kind of like when Ewell jumped from no contract to suddenly he was starting against Portland in 2014 out of nowhere. It's like, hey, your job is very simple. Just do this. So I think that's the same thing they're doing with the 18-year-old homegrown. Yeah. So while Grêmio is a little bit more advanced, it is still surprising to spot him. Like, he just made a run inside, you know, the penalty box. What the?
Yeah, it's not something we're used to seeing. You know, as we're sitting here talking about this, I'm reminded of an interview that Ja'Cory Hayes actually gave about Oscar Pareja's midfield, and I think it was about the time when. This time last year when we faced New York City in New York City and Ja'Cory Hayes had gotten a start and he had gotten kind of, he was he looked kind of out of sorts, and he was asked about it after the game. He's like, you guys don't understand, like, what Oscar Pereja asks of this midfield. Like, he's like, you should be over here, but now you should be over here and me over here. And like, there's just so much demands that Pereja was putting on those two defensive midfields. I would be super interested to talk to him and see what he thinks about this new system and if it's like how it compares. Maybe we can make that happen, but I'd love to hear about that.
I have a hunch the system suits him way better because of the possession style. And Ja'Cory Hayes is, you can't take the ball off of him. I think Jared Tilley asked in the Big D Slot channel, it's like, hey, what's the difference between Pereja and Lucci or something like that? And I was like, the biggest difference right now for me is the usage of subs. Like when he threw in Ja'Cory Hayes at the end of that RSL game, not the end, but like towards the middle of the second half, like RSL was gaining a lot of possession and momentum in that game. Like, you have 10 men. This shouldn't be happening. No, you're home, but this shouldn't be happening anyway. So he's like, got Ja'Cory in, and immediately Ja'Cory was like, I'm going to hold the ball. And they just fouled him and they could not get the ball off of him. So I'm sensing that with the possession style, this would suit Ja'Cory a lot better. I feel like he's like a Nagby light right now. Like, just very, very clean on the ball, really good in possession. Still a little bit young, needs maybe a year or two, more extra seasoning, but I can see him really filling in really well in this system.
That's fair. Cool. Well, speaking of getting the ball and keeping the ball, here's a podcast transition for you. Let's talk a little bit about possession and holding the ball. With this new style, Lucci really wants to just keep the ball and play possession. And what that means is we're going to have the ball and we're going to pass it around and make short, small passes and then try to penetrate the defense as we do that. I think Lucci said in his very first press conference, we had something like 630 passes in that first game, first home game. And he's like, yeah, we want to do 700 passes per game, which we all kind of like, what? But talk a little bit about, like, I guess one of the talking points or one of the things that people talk about when they talk about the possession is meaningful possession, meaningful passes. What are you seeing in the stats as the games have evolved, and that, like, it seems as if they just have that more dangerous feel as they've gotten used to the system and made more, been, I would say, even braver and had more confidence in the last couple games?
Yeah, so I kind of criticized their possession style after that New England game. I thought they were very poor. They had, what, like 8 shots in that one or something? Oh, let me look it up real quick. I have it up. They had 9 shots on that one at home, like, to open the season. Like, New England sucks. Like, yeah, you can't have 60, what was this? I think they had 67% possession. Like, that's nice. But when you draw 1-1, I'm going to look at the numbers and say, okay, you drew 1-1. Why? It's like, well, you had 9 shots. I'm like, oh, did you have the ball a lot or no? It's like, you had the ball a ton. Where was the ball? In the backfield between Matt Hedges and Ziegler. So they didn't lose. It was still 1-1. So, okay, fine.
Hashtag bright side.
Yes. But it lacked any kind of inspiration. Or, like, this just seemed like you guys are doing a passing drill, a possession drill, rather than actually trying to win the game. So that was kind of where I started. It's like, hey, you have this, which is good, but if this doesn't evolve or can improve or get better, then these 1-1 draws are going to be kind of a standard thing. So I wasn't saying, you know, ditch the whole thing, but I don't know. It was week 1, first game. new coach, new players, everything's going to be fine, but it was something I was going to watch. And then, you know, second game, 12 shots against Columbus. It was a loss, but it was 8 shots. And then Colorado and RSL. Well, the RSL's, you know, they had that early red card, so it's hard to say. So Colorado 15 and RSL 12. So they are generating more chances. So if people say meaningful possession, I think that's kind of subjective, because, you know, when you are down, or when you're up by a goal, possession of any kind is going to be meaningful, because if you have the ball, the other team can't score. But sure. If you're trailing and you're just hoofing it up because that's what you have to do, and you got like 1 minute to go, you're hoofing up, you're like, oh, why are you just kicking up there? It's like, well, that's still meaningful because you need to get the ball closer to goal to kind of create a chance. So it's kind of subjective, but I was shocked at his 700 passes a game comment. I was like, that is insane. Yeah. An insane number for this league. There's like, but because, I mean, I'm looking at, again, I'm unfair to compare to Oscar Pereira's team, but Pereira's teams were averaging about like 380 passes. There, I think he hit 600 like twice in the last two seasons under Pereira's realm. So I was like, this is a really, really different way to approach it with almost the same core players. Yeah. So it was kind of shocking, but it's kind of been fun to see this. Oh, we can play, we can adapt, and we can change.
Yeah. Yeah. When I look at that stat, I think what stands out to me and is kind of just made me chuckle a little bit is that, you know, people talk about that passing stat, and the game where I felt like we just started feeling real dangerous was that Colorado game. And part of it's because Colorado's not great. but part of it, if you look at the stats on that game, we didn't even have 500 passes in that game. It was like 498, something like that. I'd have to look it up. But we looked really dangerous in that game, despite not having a whole bunch of passes. And I think it's because we started seeing the influence of Paxton taking the ball and making runs with the ball and not necessarily just passing for passing's sake. And I think you saw a lot more passing multi, I guess, trying to skip the line, the defensive line, and move the ball forward with those passes and but it wasn't just hoofing it. They were purposeful, and we completed a lot of them too. So it was just kind of interesting that the game I felt like we started to really come into our dangerous zone was the game we had the least amount of passes so far. So
it was 487. I just looked it up.
Thank you.
But that was stat metric reason. You are very well. I have the sheet in front of me. I have a cheat sheet, but I'm impressed that you are so close. I wonder if, like, that's a very good point. Like, I read an interview with Steve Kerr did, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors.
That went cross sports reference.
Yes, here we go. I was very intrigued. I was like, this guy just sounds very smart, so I kind of want to listen to it. And he talked about how when he first took over after being an assistant, I think it was in San Antonio. Before that, so he was learning under Greg Popovich. He said that he wanted to, like, hey, he crunched and had a stats guy crunch numbers that, hey, we generate better shot opportunities, higher quality field goal shots. I don't know what they're called in that sport. But if we do like 37 plus passes per possession, so I was like, okay. So he told his players, every time we bring the ball down court, you need to hit this number or try to hit this number before you shoot. And then they did it for a little while. They were struggling for about like 2 weeks. And he's like, guys, I'm not saying you have to hit 37 passes before you shoot the ball. What I meant is when we pass the ball more frequently, we end up creating a better shot. Like, he's like, some of the guys were passing them wide open shots because they hadn't hit their pass mark yet. So he's like, that's not the point. Like, the point was to create wide open shots, high quality shots. And I think once that clicked, then you saw Golden State run the lead to the ground. But I kind of wonder if the same thing was happening with the FC Dallas players in that Colorado game. Like, guys, I know I said 700, but you don't have to just keep passing it. If you see a chance to break the lines, hit it. And of course, he played, Paul McCall was playing, Aaron Grease was playing, players who can hit those passes and are looking to hit those passes to skip the whole midfield and play the ball behind the defense. So I think they're starting to figure out, I don't have to pass the ball constantly, but look for the better pass. And if there's a good opportunity, then we need to take it.
Sure. Anything else with the passing that you want to talk about and the possession before we move on?
FC Dallas is sitting second in the league in possession at 58.1. Atlanta is still number one in that. I still don't understand how that's possible. So I don't get it.
I can't help you.
I'm so confused by that. I was like, how are you number one and still so bad?
Yeah, that guy, that coach, there's already Frank DeBoer out Twitter handles and everything. So he's Atlanta fandom is fun to watch from the outside.
It is very fun to watch. It's they're great. They're really excited. They're very passionate. I feel like they feel their feelings 110%, whichever way it goes.
Yes, well, that sounds kind of like my daughters. Well, we talked about Paxton and his introduction into that midfield and kind of the role he plays. Let's talk a little bit about when we don't have the ball and how we get it back. So let's talk a little bit about the pressing that we see from time to time with FC Dallas. It looks in the past couple of games, it looks like that pressing runs right through Paxton. Like, he's the guy that says, all right, I'm going to go after that guy. You guys come with me. And then he kind of is the kicks it off. And then all the players play off of his cue more often than not whenever they do the press. Am I misreading that situation?
That's my hunch. I don't know for certain, but I think you're spot on of this could be something that has been instructed to them because Paxton knows the system well. So they just really have to read. And when it comes to defense, is to read him. Okay, where is he going? Is he pressing? If he goes, we go. If he doesn't, we don't. And generally, he wants to go. Like he likes to get involved in the play. So, and then they're like, okay, well, if he goes, then we go. And it's working. They're pressing in as a unit really well, as a midfield. Kind of like that opening goal. I thought Aaron Grease did really well. He got sidestepped by Brooks Lennon a little too easily on that first goal. But Aaron Grease has committed himself to playing defense. We see him making the sprints back, the runs back. I think it's part of it is also Lucha Gonzalez just telling him, if you want to see minutes, these are things you have to do. And he's like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, it's kind of a stark contrast to me from what you'd see last year with Maxi leading that, where you'd see Maxi make a run and try to lead the press. And then he'd force the pass and he'd look around behind him. And a lot of times nobody was doing the same thing that he was. And you just see him throw his hands up in the air in disgust that nobody else is pressing and I'm running all the way up here. So, but this year, like you said, it seems to be a cohesive unit playing the same type of defense and on the same page, which is really fun to watch.
Yeah, I think the team's starting blocks are higher. It's easier to press. I think with Pareja's teams, especially last season, his more counterattacking style base. So then, when you're counterattacking, you got to start further back so that you have more space to run. So when Maxi would go, the guys are like, I don't want to run this far right now.
It's a long way.
It is a long way. And he's got the engine to go. So I don't know if that's miscommunication or probably some combination, like Maxime misread it, or the rest of the team misread it, or they're like, we're not doing this, and he just went solo or something. But there's some combination of things, and I think just the starting positions of where everyone is for the Dallas team right now just makes it a lot easier for them to press. Like, even when they lose the ball, they're generally in a pretty good place. Like, I haven't seen them get stretched defensively or out of shape. Like, they're really just giving up goals on set pieces, like, and mm-hmm. opportunities off set pieces. They're not really getting pulled apart. And I think part of that is that the triple pivot that Lucci Gonzalez has put in there.
Yeah. When everybody knows how to play all the positions, no one's ever out of position, theoretically.
Let's just do that. Can we clone 11 Paxtons?
Yes,
let's do that. 10. We need an actual proper goalie.
Yeah, well, we got Ryan Hollingshead for that.
Oh, good point.
speaking of Paxton and this the president, the last point I think I'll make and is that he said to us after the game, after the Colorado game, somebody asked him, like, is it fun? Like, we see you take the ball and run, and like, you have love having, looks like you love having the ball on your feet. And like, what about the other stuff? Like, how does that? And he basically said, yeah, I love having the ball, but I also, in order to have the ball, I have to get it back. And so that's what motivates me to go run after and put in the work to get the ball back, because then I have the ball back. So
I like that kid.
Yeah, dude, the kid's got his head on straight. He's mature beyond what you'd think a 19-year-old professional footballer would be.
He doesn't talk like a 19-year-old.
Is he 20 now? He might be 20.
Maybe. Is he still 19? I think he's still 19.
Regardless.
Call him 19 for now.
Regardless. All right. Well, do you have anything else you want to add as far as tactics go?
Not tactics, but I do want to just harp on continue praising Paxton, because he's wearing that number 19 jersey, which has a lot of historical significance, and he's doing it really well.
Yeah. I think there's a story where he actually went and asked Bobby Ryan's family, like, hey, I want to wear the number 19. Can I wear it? And they basically could give him their blessing.
Yes.
So that's pretty cool.
Just the way he did it, he understood the significance of that number to this club, for it to be a new tradition in this club, as, hey, when you are the next kind of star homegrown, you're trying to get that number 19. So, like, some players try to get that number 10 or that number 7, like 19 is that number. And he's doing it really well and kind of making a very, make a very proud moment there. Just like, hey, he's doing incredibly well.
I think it was Thomas Roberts was saying on the 19th Minute podcast that he's got the number 23 jersey, and he was the number 23. He was the 23rd homegrown signed. So I think that would be a cool tradition if they would do that. Unfortunately, I think Cirillo was the 24th, and he's the number 33. So that tradition lasted once, but yeah, trying to get the number 19 is pretty cool.
Yeah, we can blame Hedges for occupying 24 right now. Thanks, Captain.
That guy. Yeah, well, he's not the captain anymore.
Vice captain. Co-captain?
Vice.
He doesn't wear the armband. He's still the captain.
Yeah. That's a whole nother episode about that.
Oh, yes.
About my feeling. I have opinions, but we won't get into them now. So let's wrap up the tactics. And let's kind of, before we wrap up the whole episode, I know we mentioned at the beginning of the show that you write for American Soccer Analysis. Have you been keeping track of the statistics and the advanced stats for FC Dallas this season? And if so, what's jumping out at you?
And by right, I write a preview for them once a year.
Okay.
I did write a bit more for them, but they have gone way beyond my skill set that I just kind of step in when they need someone to do some filler pieces. They never do filler pieces, but No, I've not looked into more advanced stats yet. I feel like the sample size is just a little bit too small with five games, three at home. And then I really hate, as someone who likes to watch from the analytical standpoint, I hate when a red card happens. It just ruins everything. Nothing. The game state is so weird. So I would even say it's only been four games. And at that point, it's just still just not enough. There's just too many new things. But maybe in a month, I will start poking around, taking a look.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's pivot here. Let's think on our feet.
Nice pun.
Thanks. I didn't even realize I'd done it until you pointed it out. But yeah, I totally meant to do that. And I'm an awesome orator, which is patently false. So switching then. So if not the advanced stats, I have seen nice match center screenshots posted to your chalkboard articles. And so I know you have been looking at the regular stats.
Yes.
What of the stats that you've been looking at for these articles have kind of like jumped out to you and really caught your attention so far?
Dallas is not crossing the ball as much anymore, except for their one loss, which is against Columbus. The Colorado was the other game where they hit double digits. Columbus, they went to 23. Everything else is below 10, below 9. So that's that's very indicative of the style of the play. They're not just swinging the ball in, which is good because they don't have a target striker right now. Well, Cobra, but he's not on the field.
Yeah, so a lot more direct play is what we can infer from that. More movement through the middle, but in order to get our opportunities. Yes.
So it's not just, hey, hit the ball. Hit the ball to Barrios on the right. Barrios run, cut, and then, or don't even cut, just hit the ball into the penalty area to whoever. I guess last year it was Rudy, sometimes Coleman. I'm like, cool.
Baggi at the end.
Oh, yes, that's right. I was like, there's somebody else. So when, you know, just going back to what we just said, where people talk about, you know, having some meaningful possession. So they're kind of taking that out. It's like, hey, this is not part of the game plan anymore. We're not going to hit crosses unless you really see something. Like, no more hopeful ones. Do you remember Hernan Grana, who was here a few years ago?
Yeah.
He drove me insane with the way he floated his crosses over everybody. I was like, he did all the work of overlapping. Like, you just ran half the field to overlap. You beat your defender, and then all of a sudden, okay, now you can hit the cross, but then you just hit it above everybody all the way to the other side of the penalty box before it lands. I'm like, that's a waste. You're basically just passing the ball to the defense at that point. But, you know, now it's, if they do get into those spots where there are no other options except to maybe cross it, they're actually driving it a lot lower. So, hey, the defender or the keeper has to make a play. I mean, generally, they do. They make the right play, but you're still making them do something as opposed to just collecting a floated pass, which is nice. The other thing is Dallas are not reliant on set pieces very much offensively. Right now, I think they have one, which was a penalty. And then, at least from the stats, they don't have anything considered as a counterattack goal. Everything is from open play or from the penalty. So I remember there was a season where it was like set piece goals were their thing, or the rainbow, to at least to create some opportunities. But that seems to be a thing of the past.
Now we just do the short corners, unless Aranguiz is in the game, and then we do good ones.
But I need to see more of Aranguiz. I'm starting to really like him. I feel like he's buying into what needs to be done, and I say give him another 6 months before, you know, this making a decision whether he's worth all of it that or not.
Yeah, I think the problem with Aranguiz is Arangis, Arangius. I don't know. I'm going to pretend to try to know how to pronounce it. The problem with him last season was just there was no good spot for him. We can't take, can't not start Maxey. And we had him at that 10 position, which is where Arangis would be, right? And so then what do you do with him? And he's small. And so, and hadn't really kind of shown that he can assert himself like he has a little bit this season, as you were talking about earlier. But I think there are more spots in this system under Lucci that he can fit in and play a role than there were last year. So I think we'll see more of him. And I think I'm going to go out and say that he's going to be a starter over Mascara by the summer, because I have some problems with Mascara, and I'll just kind of skim over them right now. Dude never goes 90.
That's true.
He's always coming off.
He's gassed at 65.
And, yep. And so noticeably gassed. And so I think that if I probably Pablito can start and then make it past 60 to the 65th minute and still be showing some engine, I think he overtakes Mascara in the pecking order for that left wing.
I'm on board with that.
Hot sports opinion.
That's a good, I think a lot of people would agree with that. Mascara doesn't play fast enough in the system yet. Where Arangis does, like he plays the ball so much faster than anybody else on this team. Just getting the ball moving. Not that Mosquera's style is bad; it's just not fitting right now. Like Mosquera was pretty decent last year under Pareja, but he needs to change a little bit. Or I thought Mosquera can play as a striker or the secondary striker position. I wonder if he needs to go up top if Jesus Ferreira can't go.
You know, it might not be a bad shout to try that, especially if, I guess Baji's injured right now and he's having some finishing woes. So, you know, that might not be a bad thing. If you believe in Santi and you want him on the field, why not put him there and see what happens? Maybe try it at the end of a game or something. Yeah. I don't know. Just see how it goes.
30-minute run.
But
since he can't go 90, he's like, hey, we'll cover 30 minutes.
You said it before I did. All right. Well, let's go ahead and let's go and wrap it up. It's coming up on time. So, Jason, thank you so much for joining me tonight, and thanks for all you do over at Big D with those chalkboard. I know a lot of people really like reading those and kind of thinking a little bit more about the game from a different perspective after they've watched the game. So it's always nice to have that out there. So thanks for writing those, and I'll go ahead and clapping for you here. I don't want to make the listeners have to hear my clap, but yeah.
You can just imagine it.
Yes.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. It's good to see you.
Yeah. We got to, just a side note, we got to actually meet each other in person at the, was it the Colorado game? No, the LA game.
LA. LA game. I don't know how you found me either.
Well, we were direct messaging, and you said I'm playing goalie, so I came over and I just saw yeah. I'm kind of stalkery, I guess, but shortly we'll take credit for that second, for that Brian Acosta goal, because shortly after we had met each other and said goodbye to each other on my way back to my seat. That's when that goal happened. So that's completely our, like, we'll take complete credit for that because we met each other.
That's right. Because we met, Acosta wanted to christen that moment with the most beautiful volley I've seen in person. I'm like, oh my goodness. I was really expecting to get hit by that shot from where I was sitting. I was like, you're going to sky this right into my face. Oh no, you did it. But cool. Thanks.
The back of the net saved you.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So you can find Jason on Twitter as at Jason Poon FC.
Yep.
And you can find him on the writings at bigdsoccer.com. and all of the chalkboard articles are his. And once a year, apparently, you can find him on AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com doing the FC Dallas preview. So everybody go follow Jason. Give him a howdy. And we are online at DallasSoccerShow.com or on Twitter at DallasSoccerShow with no E. And we will catch you guys later. Take it easy.
Thank you.